Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Mario Ritter, Anne Ball, and Brian Lynn. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will tell us the brief history of President William Henry Harrison in the VOA Learning English series, America's Presidents. But first, Mario Ritter tells us about some American stores that are closing because of online retailers like Amazon.
Well-known businesses across the United States are facing hard decisions about keeping their stores open. Experts say Americans are changing the way they buy clothing and other products. They say people are making more purchases over the Internet and looking for better shopping experiences. After years of falling sales, department store chains like Sears, Kmart, and Macy's are closing stores around the country. So are Abercrombie and Fitch, JCPenney, and other businesses. In February, Sears announced plans to close 150 stores it owns in the United States. That number includes more than 100 Kmart stores. The company recently said it is not sure about keeping its remaining stores open. Sears was established in 1893 as Sears Roebuck and Company. It offered a catalog that became famous all over the U.S. Americans could choose from a large number of goods pictured in the book. Shoppers would send their orders to Sears and receive products in the mail, even if they lived far from a big city. Denise Lee Yawn wrote a book called What Great Brands Do. She told VOA's Victor Beatty that department stores have faced a difficult time in recent years because of competition from Internet businesses.
The department store category as a whole has been declining as online sales and as Amazon specifically has been on the rise.
But she added that Sears has a long history and a name that is still recognizable to many Americans. Sears has struggled under ownership by Eddie Lampert, who operates a hedge fund. The company has had to sell some of its best-known brands, including Lands' End Clothing and Craftsman Tools. Lee Yawn said the company did not do enough to develop its online business. Sears also did not invest in the appearance of their stores, she added. However, she thinks companies like Sears can come back to life. She said carmaker Ford is an example of a company that was able to revive its business. The company also must show its employees they are valued as a way to improve customer service. Otherwise, she said, Sears may not survive. Sears is not the only nationwide business closing stores. Macy's Incorporated has said in recent months that it plans to close more than 60 Macy's department stores. The move could affect thousands of jobs. Some business experts believe the future of retail sales will be different from what traditional department stores have had to offer. Last month, the financial research company Synchrony Financial released a report about changes in the retail sales industry. The report said that there will likely be department stores in the future, but just not as many as there used to be. It also said stores should seek to provide more reasons for shoppers to visit. People are social by nature and will be drawn to gathering places to share ideas and be entertained, the report noted. It's not just about making money. It's about building trust. Retailers who tap into this trend will be rewarded. The report pointed to some new ideas linked to the future of shopping. These include stores where people shop and pay for products by themselves, so-called do-it-yourself shopping. Synchrony Financial also said that shoppers will expect stores to use their personal information to deliver better customized products and offers. Many experts say stores need to better use technology in order to interest their customers. Not all retail stores are cutting back. One example is Urban Outfitters, a company that operates about 200 stores under its own name and also the name Anthropologie. Urban Outfitters says it plans to open 15 stores across the country. The company, based in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, has not had sharp losses reported by other retail stores. And online seller Amazon recently started to open its own stores in U.S. cities. The company that changed the way people bought things online hopes to do the same with stores focused on its own line of products. I'm Mario Ritter.
Very small pieces of plastic called microfibers are polluting rivers and oceans. The source of these microfibers may surprise you. Your clothes. Clothes worn for outdoor activities and exercise are often made of synthetic material like polyester or nylon. In cold weather, many people wear soft fleece clothing to keep warm. They contain very small plastic fibers. They may also be harming the environment when you wash them. When people wash these clothes, very small pieces go down the drain with the wash water. These microfibers cannot be seen without a microscope.
Pollution caused by plastic is not new. But recent studies have shown the effect of microfibers in the environment. Studies show very small microfibers are ending up in our waters. A 2015 study found them in fish from California. They have even been found in table salt in China. For 3 years, the Montana-based group Adventure Scientists has been researching microfibers and microplastics by collecting water samples from around the world. Katie Holsinger is Adventure Scientists' microplastics manager. She says 75% of the water samples contained microplastics, but there has been a surprise.
In our samples, 90% of the plastics we're finding are microfibers. Those are oftentimes originating from textiles or other fibrous synthetic products.
The group has adventure athletes collect water samples while they are enjoying the outdoors and most likely wearing this kind of clothing. So far, they have collected almost 2,300 1-liter bottles of water from oceans and fresh waters all over the planet, even remote places.
What we know right now is that microplastic contamination is pervasive and it exists in places we would expect, which may be downstream from wastewater treatment facilities, and in places that maybe at first we wouldn't expect, in some really remote areas of this world.
Patagonia is a company that makes fleece jackets and clothing popular with outdoor athletes. The data on microfibers led them to support research to find ways to stop the fabric from coming off in the wash. The company provided support for research done by Patricia Holden and her students at the University of California, Santa Barbara. The researchers worked to find out how much of the microfibers are released when washed. They tested fleece clothes from both Patagonia and another company by washing them in several kinds of washing machines. They caught the fibers with filters and weighed them. They found, on average, fleece clothes lost 0.3% of the cloth, or about 1 gram of fiber, with each washing. The study was published in Environmental Science and Technology last September. Patricia Holden explains the weight of these microfibers can add up.
So you think about the, you know, literally millions of garments like this that are being washed every day. And if a gram or more from each is being released into the wash water, that adds up. That can potentially add up to quite a bit.
Beyond the waterways, the researchers say microfibers may end up in soil and agricultural lands. They can also move around the atmosphere. This means there is much to be learned about microfibers and the environment, Holden says.
Still very few studies, and we need a good grip on the magnitude of this problem, where most of these fibers are ending up, and then that will tell us how to focus our future research and our future action where it's needed to safeguard human health and the environment.
Some studies have shown that microfibers end up inside marine animals like oysters. So if these microfibers have been found in fish and seafood, are they safe to eat? Holden says the fibers tend not to move into the tissue of the fish. Researchers, including Holden, say that needs more study.
It's not necessarily a new problem, but it's being newly recognized as an issue that we need to better understand. Is it a real problem? Is it a real problem for human health in terms of our diet of fish or other types of foods? We just don't know.
Katie Holsinger from Adventure Scientists says the microplastics are harming sea creatures. She says because other toxins can attach to microfibers and other plastics, it is something we should all consider when we make food choices.
Right now, what science is coming out is tying microplastics ingested into fish, and the way that those microplastics and the concentration of them in fish is affecting their mortality, their ability to reproduce, their nervous system function.
Until more information becomes known, there are steps to take to reduce the amount of microfibers in the environment. Katie Holsinger says people should use less of the synthetic materials.
But of course, we rely, including heavily on my yoga pants that are stretchy and my polar fleeces to keep me warm outside. So if we already have those in our lives and we're using them, an important step would be washing them less.
New technology may also help. A bag is being designed in which to wash these clothes. It traps the microfibers in the bag and may soon be available for purchase. Already on the market are filters for washing machines to keep microfibers from escaping with the wash water. I'm Ann Ball.
And I'm Brian Lynn.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about William Henry Harrison. Although he was elected in 1840, many Americans still remember his catchy campaign slogan, Tippecanoe and Tyler Too.
For Tippecanoe and Tyler Too, for Tippecanoe and Tyler Too.
Tyler referred to John Tyler, Harrison's partner on the ticket. In other words, Harrison was the candidate for president, and Tyler was the candidate for vice president. That seems straightforward enough, but Tippecanoe? That was Harrison's nickname. It came from a battle he had fought nearly 30 years before the presidential campaign. At that time, Harrison led troops against an alliance of Native American tribes. The alliance was fighting white American settlers who were taking Native people's territory. Harrison and his men wanted to prevent the alliance from getting the supplies and warriors it needed to fight a long war. They planned to attack an important Native American base in what is today the state of Indiana. But Native American warriors attacked first. They struck at dawn, when Harrison's men were still sleeping in a camp near the river Tippecanoe. The battle was confused and bloody. Many fighters on both sides died. It was not really clear who won, but Harrison declared victory. His presidential campaign reminded voters about the battle. The nickname Tippecanoe suggested Harrison was a simple yet tough Westerner who would fight for white Americans. But that image of Harrison was not entirely true. Harrison did not come from a simple Western family. Instead, he was the youngest child of a wealthy family from the southern state of Virginia. The Harrisons were active in the politics of the young nation. His father signed the Declaration of Independence and became the governor of Virginia. Young William Harrison received a good education, but he did not want to become a doctor or lawyer. He joined the military instead. Harrison succeeded quickly as an army officer. He earned a reputation as an able leader in fights against Native Americans. Harrison became the governor of what was known as Indiana Territory. In that job, he persuaded Native Americans to enter into treaties that sold their land to the U.S. government, often for very little money. Harrison's insistence on securing land for white settlers was one reason Native American tribes formed an alliance against the United States. A member of the Shawnee tribe, Tecumseh, was one of their most prominent leaders. It was Tecumseh's men who fought against Harrison in the Battle of Tippecanoe. Tecumseh's men clashed again with Harrison during the War of 1812 at a battle in Ontario, Canada, near the River Thames. In that battle, both the British and Native Americans were clearly defeated. Tecumseh was killed. After that, the Native American alliance fell apart, and Harrison became famous again. Although Harrison was a well-known fighter against Native Americans, he could not find lasting success as a politician. He served briefly in both the House of Representatives and the Senate, but he did not stay in those positions long. He struggled with debt. His home in Indiana was very expensive. He also had to provide for his 10 children. The emotional cost of his family was also high. Only 4 of his children lived past the age of 40. In 1836, Harrison's fortunes seemed to change. A new party, called the Whigs, looked to him as a presidential candidate. The Whigs strongly opposed President Andrew Jackson and his policies. They did not want Jackson's vice president and right-hand man, Martin Van Buren, to become president. But they understood that Jackson was very popular with everyday Americans. So the Whigs thought that Harrison, a military hero from the West, just as Jackson was, would appeal to voters. At the time, voting was limited mostly to white men. The Whigs nominated Harrison as one of their candidates. Harrison did well, but not well enough. Van Buren won the 1836 election, but the next election belonged to Harrison. His campaign developed that memorable song about Tippecanoe and Tyler, too. Supporters also turned an insult against Harrison into an advantage. Harrison's opposition said he would be happy to spend the rest of his life just sitting in a log cabin and drinking hard cider, an alcoholic drink made from apples. The opposition wanted to suggest that Harrison was not really interested in becoming president and working hard for the American people. But Harrison's supporters used the images of a log cabin and hard cider to portray Harrison as a humble man who could relate to common Americans. In 1842, the plan was a success. Harrison won the election.
Sure, let him talk about hard cider, 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 and log cabins too. Will only help to speed the ball for Tippecanoe and Tyler too, for Tippecanoe and Tyler too. And with him we'll beat little Van, Van, Van is a used up man. And with him we'll beat little Van.
At 68, Harrison was the oldest person yet to take office. On his inauguration day, he reportedly wanted to show that he was strong enough to serve as president by delivering a very long speech without wearing a coat or hat. Several weeks later, Harrison became sick. He complained of many problems, anxiety, fatigue, and pain in his stomach. His health grew worse and worse. 1 month after he was sworn in, Harrison died. It was the first time in the country's history that a president had died in office. The event raised many questions about who would become president. That question is answered in the next episode of this series. For future generations, it also raised a question about what Harrison died of. The traditional story is that his long inaugural speech led to a fatal pneumonia. But researchers in 2014 proposed a different reason. Jane McHugh and Philip Makowiak wrote in the New York Times that while Harrison was in office, Washington, D.C. did not have a good sewer system. Human waste simply flowed onto public grounds a short distance from the White House. The researchers conclude that Harrison probably died from problems related to drinking dirty water in the president's house. So, for Harrison, winning the White House may not have been good fortune at all. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. You can find more science reports and stories about American presidents at learningenglish.voanews.com. While you are visiting our website, you can also read the stories that you have just heard on this program. You can also read, listen to, and download our other programs on the website. You will also find captioned videos and lessons to test your American English skills. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.